Welcome back to The New World next week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, and we are dumping an ice bucket on the red nose of corporate media today. A gang of organized criminals murders millions around the globe, but one motorcycle gang fight really shows you where American media is. So this week's episode hopes to be an antidote to that, as we've gathered together stories that prove, yet again, the powers that shouldn't be are pretty bad liars. Let's start with hashtag Stephanopoulos Gate. There's an interesting op-ed on USA Today that points out quite, you know, the obvious. And if you haven't gotten the thumbnail sketch of Stephanopoulos Gate, we'll lay it out for you briefly. ABC News chief anchor George Stephanopoulos has been embroiled in a scandal after he failed to disclose $75,000 in donations to the Clinton Foundation before grilling author Peter Schweizer, the author of a book critical of the foundation called Clinton Cash. The former Clinton aide accused the author of having a partisan interest in writing the book, due in part to his four-month stint as a George W. Bush speechwriter. So, James, this op-ed basically asks, why should we be surprised about this at all? If he hadn't given the money, would the interview had gone any differently? There are also reports now, as this kerfuffle gets bigger and bigger, of Geraldo saying, hey, I got fired for like a $200 donation in a small race. Why isn't the, you know, equal time, as the media would sort of say, James? But I think maybe the thing to cut to the chase is George Stephanopoulos isn't a journalist and he just plays one on TV, right?
That's pretty much it. Are we really shocked that the former Clinton campaign manager is shilling for Clinton? I mean, is this a shock to anybody? I go to this Clinton Global Initiative notable media members page, and you will find not only George Stephanopoulos, of course, but Christian Amanpour, Thomas Friedman, Nicholas Kristof, Fareed Zakaria, Anderson Cooper, Tom Brokaw, all of the usual gaggle are all there. They're all notable media members of the Clinton Global Initiative, because it's a wonderful, happy, fuzzy, charitable foundation, right? No, I don't think so. Again, this is not a surprise. This is not breaking news. But it's good to at least see the way the media treats this conversation and the way that they dissect it and try to step around the landmine of the elephant in the living room, which is the fact that, I mean, come on. Mockingbird has been exposed for decades. We know the CIA has plants in the media. We just saw the release of all those documents about Gary Webb and the way he was deconstructed by CIA plants in the media. So, I mean, we know this goes on. This is not breaking news to any of our viewers and listeners, but still, it's interesting to get a window into some of these scandals once in a while, just to leverage the what's going on there. But I don't know. For my mind, this is absolutely a non-story insofar as I'm not surprised in the least.
That Global Initiative Clinton list you were reading sounds a hell of a lot like the Council on Foreign Relations roster list, as I was double-checking to confirm, yes, indeed, George Stephanopoulos is a Council on Foreign Relations member. James, there's a documentary from 93 called The War Room, and I remember seeing it on VHS, and it's a fly-on-the-wall look. It's actually by legendary documentarian D.A. Pennebaker, about the sort of so-called, you know, revolutionary Clinton campaign for selection 1992, the one where Bill ran against close family friend George H.W. Bush. Perhaps, sidebar note, maybe we should put The War Room on perhaps a future episode of something like Film Literature and the New World Order, James.
Film Literature Documentaries in the New World Order, even.
It'll expand. So, again, I think our three stories on this episode 229 of New World Next Week all show, again, that they're bad liars. Our second segment serves up two different slices of genetically modified media. First, Nat Geo gets it wrong on GMOs. This from GMWatch.org. On May 4th, National Geographic published an article by a guy named Jeremy Berlin that featured a pro-GMO scientist named Pam Ronald talking about flood-tolerant rice. Ronald and her team have developed a variety of such rice with a tasty name called Sub-1. The article basically praised Ronald and GMOs, using Ronald's real-life marriage to an organic farmer to suggest that only a combination of GMOs and organic farming will feed the world, a sort of human interest angle, if you will. But the big problem with this message is that the example promoted in the article of flood-tolerant rice isn't actually genetically modified, but the product of conventional breeding. So far from it actually being a reason why GM will feed the world, it's an example of the opposite, James. I find the second example perhaps more interesting, but your thoughts about Nat Geo and GMOs, James?
Actually, I mean, it's kind of funny. I've seen this kind of confusion before with people claiming a crop is GM when it actually isn't. And I think this goes to show the fundamental scientific illiteracy that underlies a lot of this debate among people who don't even know what crops are or are not genetically modified, then presuming to tell us that those genetically modified crops that aren't actually genetically modified are necessary for the sustenance of the species. They are just nothing other than Monsanto propaganda shills. So, you know, again, not surprising, but it's good to know these details so that we can throw it back in their face.
So our second slice of genetically modified media, also from GMWatch.org, Mark Linus accused of fabricating story in the New York Times. He is rarely out of the news these days. Mark Linus, his attention is generated by this remarkable journey he describes, where he became the first anti-GMO activist in the world, but ended up as an avid GMO supporter, desperate to make amends for the horrible movement that he started. A recent headline, "Why the Founder of the Anti-GMO Movement Converted to the Side of Science." That perfectly captures the trope of the repentant environmentalist that corporate media finds so irresistible. Despite the fact that his claim to being a founding member of the anti-GMO movement has been roundly condemned as completely untrue by a whole phalanx of genuinely leading figures in the environmental movement, Mark Linus just keeps on making this assumption, and I haven't actually ever heard of him before this either, so that should also add to the pile. So his remarkable conversion, James, is really interesting, where he suddenly gets a position at the Bill Gates Foundation at Cornell as part of their Cornell Alliance for Science. This allows him to do Gates-funded paid promotion of GMOs to the exclusion of almost everything else. So his article in the New York Times is "How I Got Converted to GMO Food." So, James, we see the lies being put forth, but it doesn't take a whole bunch of research to go, hey, I think you're lying, and the proof is here, 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 and here.
No, exactly right. And on that very note, if there's any positive part about these stories, it's the fact they both do come from GMWatch.org, which is a great resource for keeping up on this type of news. I use it. They have a newsletter that they can email out. I suggest people get on that list if they're interested in GMO issues, because they keep a good tab on it. And if you are following their website, you will be all too familiar with Mark Linus and Patrick Moore, who was recently challenged to drink a glass of glyphosate and refused that challenge, even though it's perfectly safe. All of those types of stories come through GM Watch, so it's a good website for keeping a handle on this.
And we will actually get to a little bit of good news. Some of it will have quotes around it in just a moment. But James, I think an interesting addendum or related to this second story comes with Facebook partnering with the New York Times to publish stories. So I grabbed this from the Sydney Morning Herald. Facebook recently reached a deal with the New York Times and other media outlets to publish articles directly to the social network's mobile news feeds. Stories will load faster to mobile applications and include content from BuzzFeed and National Geographic and the New York Times. Sources we've just now laid out have not been fully truthful. So another article, Facebook's deal with the New York Times and BuzzFeed, why the media should resist it and why it can't, even coming from the media's own big mouthpiece, coming from Slate there. Now, James, I've mentioned it, I think, each time. We are keeping our promise to cover good news all through 2015 on New World Next Week, and we have the hashtag Good News Next Week. And another interesting one. BBC admits breaching its own rules by broadcasting pro-Israel propaganda. This is coming from stopwar.org.uk. A BBC investigation has found that one of its senior presenters, Sarah Montague, breached the organization's editorial standards on impartiality in a radio interview she conducted with Israeli Defense Minister Moshe Yaalon in March. The investigation was carried out following allegations of pro-Israel bias against Montague's interview by the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, and a number of concerned individuals who complained to the BBC. This ruling against Montagu is the second time in recent months that the BBC has upheld a complaint initiated by the Palestine Solidarity Campaign. So, James, there's other interesting elements that tie into this, and whether it's Facebook making deals with the New York Times and National Geographic, Google is also working behind the scenes to start to rank sites based on truthfulness. And we can get into that and your fantastic article that gets into the truthiness, if you will. But the BBC, scandal-plagued, and just still fights on somehow, James.
Well, they fight on because of the government-enforced monopoly. If you own a TV in Britain, you're obligated, legally obligated to pay, or so they say anyway. Ridiculous. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous, and it should be opposed by everyone, and it should be refused by everyone. But anyway, that's the BBC. It's a government-enforced monopoly, so hey, or not a monopoly, but they are forced or obliged to pay, supposedly, to fund their crap, their propaganda, and it continually gets exposed as propaganda. And again, it should be no surprise, really, that they were shilling for Israel during the war crimes that were being perpetrated in Gaza last year, but hey, there it is, and now they admit to it. Is that going to change anything in the future? No, but again, this is one of those stories that we can use to hopefully detach a few more people from that matrix, and every single day there are a few more people who are shedding off of that matrix, and it's a slow process, but we are, I think, winning the information war, which is exactly the point of that article that you referenced before.
And I believe it's for your International Forecaster, your article, Who's Afraid of the Internet? Elites Panic as Information Control Flounders. And you discuss Google working to rank sites based on truthfulness. This is still all just sort of research. This is not something that's about to be rolled out, unlike the Facebook New York Times deal. But some of the other hashtag good news next week notes we'll make. James, again, we oftentimes note that they're not necessarily unmitigated goods, but things worth reporting in positive turns. JP Morgan Chase, Citicorp, Barclays, and RBS fined more than $5 billion pleading guilty to market rigging. And unfortunately, that's just going to be some nickels out of the pockets of most of those Rockefeller-connected organizations. In the UK, phone hacking victims win damages from the Trinity Mirror Group, but they are mostly wealthy celebrity victims who can pay their way through the courts to get some justice. And in the U.S., Congress is just right on the brink of ending the NSA surveillance program, and then they're going to close Guantanamo, and we'll move to the metric system, and they'll give away free hugs, and it'll all be puppies and rainbows, James. That'll be good news next week.
Yeah. Well, as long as people vote in the right candidate, you know, in the next election, make sure to vote, folks, because it'll change everything. All right. Anyway, interesting. As you say, always some good news out there, but, you know, we got to take it with a grain of salt.
So let me flip it around. We did good news next week, and let's also look at hashtag New World next week. This show, over the last couple of years, James, since we've really kind of opened it up to getting stories and information from all around the world, just using hashtag New World next week, has made this show, I think, what it has become, thanks to the people involved out there that make all of this kind of worthwhile and worth doing it. So some of the stories we've been watching and reporting on New World next week, the mysterious X-37B launches yet again. Two dead, 37 other babies sickened by vaccines in southern Mexico as the trials are called off. And 38 miles from New York City, Indian Point nuclear plant shut down after a fire. And there is very little reporting about that here in the States. And damn, James, I thought for sure that New World next week would have been on Osama's playlist or book list or whatever this thing they published. As we noted last week on this very show, the Osama propaganda has to continually be trotted out to kind of hammer the story home, because ultimately, as I think we've documented on this episode, most of the lies the powers that shouldn't be tell aren't very good, and they have to keep hammering them in.
It really is ridiculous. And just in case there are any people out there in alt media land who are buying any of this crap, there was no bookshelf, there was no bin Laden in Abbottabad. It is all a fiction. It is designed to get you keep talking about this raid as if it is a real thing. It was not. It was a fiction. Do not fall for the psyop. Anyway, that's perhaps the overall arching theme of this episode and maybe all our episodes. Do not fall for the PSYOP. But let's keep pressing forward and deconstructing these stories as they come at us, and always look forward to talking with you, James. Thank you again for putting these stories together.
Thanks so much, man. Take care.